Communications Committee. And the first order of business is an informational meeting. I asked Ozzie Rose to come and talk to us about implementing the 21st Century Schools Act, and if it's the pleasure of the committee, we'll schedule other people to come next week in addition to Ozzie. Ozzie, welcome to the committee, and tell us what you want us to hear.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And as the chair knows, my appearance prompted by a conversation we had last week regarding the effort to implement the Oregon Education Act and the related pressures on people and the system to be more successful with more kids. We talk about the goal of the Education Act to have the best schools in the country by the year 2001 in the world or whatever. Those kind of words are in the act. I wish we had focused on, and I think we still should focus on, our real issue is being more successful with more kids. In a society that differs from the one 25 years ago when the acquisition of a high school diploma or not having it didn't have the same impact on what happened to you as an adult. You could make a living wage and be a contributor to society 30 years ago without getting a high school diploma, as you all know, and that is rapidly changing. And it's turned us into a focus on the words accountability, and sometimes I think that focus, although desirable, we lose track of some other reasons for having education. The chair specifically asked me, what can we do to assure teachers and others at the building level that we know the challenge is difficult and that we recognize their efforts that they are making on behalf of our students and that we are committed to full implementation of the Act. I spent a fair amount of time yesterday trying to develop a response to that I thought fit in this particular setting and decided kind of a tough question because for the most part our discussion of the school issues here where we set policy for the state are dominated by words like accountability, results, limited resources, etc. And I'm not standing, I am not suggesting that those aren't things we ought to be paying attention to and need to deal with. But what I'm trying to say is that in our focus on that side of the issue, I don't think we fully get to appreciate what happens when we try to, at the implementation level of some of the policy decisions that we make. That we have a resource problem in this state, one that you recognize you're struggling with, I know that. And I believe it's one that people in Oregon are going to have to struggle with more specifically and intimately over the next 4 years. I believe that once we got this budget, we'll begin looking at the next two or three budgets that there are some problems with resources related to what a lot of people think we ought to have in terms of a state. And having said that, I want to focus just on one little component of the effort to implement the organization, and that's around the issue of assessment. We all know that assessment is important. We all know that it's a key component. We set benchmarks, grade 3, 5, 8, and 10. All kids are going to learn certain things by the time they get to those grades. That's just part of the act. And we've developed an assessment system that measures all students against those benchmarks. That's different. It's a criterion reference approach to assessment as opposed to the norm reference standardized test that has historically been given. And norm reference tests are really a mechanism where you spread kids out over a continuum and you have ADHD students, certain portion here, certain portion there. And the norm reference test, by and large, tests stuff that kids don't know to get them spread out over the criteria reference test that we're using Because we want our kids to know certain things. And we want to know if they know it by a certain time. And it's used in two different ways. Teachers want to know what their children know, what their students know, for diagnostic purposes. Specific student, what does that student know? How well does that student do on this test? So I know what to do with that student to help that student. If I look at an entire group of students against my assessment, so I know, learn some things that I might ought to do with my next group of students. So that what a teacher wants information for is different than what we want it for. What managers, not managers in the school people, but the policy makers. And also, raises a couple issues. Teacher wants sooner. And one of the frustrating parts of the work we're doing, if you talk to teachers who test in April or whenever we get the test, and we say, I haven't got the information back till fall in some cases. And the State Department is, again, working on a contract with testing people and so forth and returning stuff around. But a teacher wants the information next week so I can use it in terms of what do I need to do with Johnny or Sally, and what do I need to do next year with my group of kids. Unfortunately, so far, the testing often gets used as, and I heard one reason, gotcha. We're going to throw up and decide where these schools rank, and this is what's important. And it is important. We need to know how we're doing, but that's one use of data. And so far, the public use of data and what makes it frustrating for people who are trying to work with children is the public use of data is more of like a penalty or a negative for which schools aren't doing something. What data is for is to say where you are, what adjustments do I need to make given that data to get somewhere else. And we need to get a lot more comfortable with how we use this data. But we use it in two different ways. Now, for the teacher to use it that way, I mentioned timing, we need to produce the data faster. So it's more useful. We need to do more to help train teachers and administrators on how to use the data, how you disaggregate the data so that you learn from it and what you want to do. And so both time and training are an issue that would decrease the level of frustration. Time and training are a resource issue, as you know. We need to measure both growth and achievement. And most of our talk is, did you achieve the benchmark? I saw one testing expert give a lecture, and at one point he asked the question, should we be talking about process or achievement? And the answer was yes. Part of the issue with youngsters is how much growth have they made, certain youngsters, how much growth have they made in the last 8 months? Where did they start? How far have you moved them? How far do they have to go? What do I have to do to help them go that next where to help them go? And by the way, just today got a thing, I haven't read all of it yet, but the Education Daily, a person has done some research that suggests that as we look at states and they rank order the states, how well they're doing, and New Hampshire always does well, et cetera, et cetera. And as you disaggregate the data and look at it, he suggests that maybe a lot of the states in the middle of the pack are actually doing a better job of educating all their youngsters in terms of whether helping kids move. By the way, he gave Oregon probably, compared to other states with similar characteristics, pretty high marks. Just back to the assessment thing, just to focus on that for a minute. We're currently debating a budget for the assessment at the state level, and there's disagreement on some of the requests by the State Department. And the history of the budget debate over the assessment, one of the things, the testing and assessment grouping in the State Department is one thing that's been cut historically when we get down to finalizing it. We have underfunded what they said they need to do to develop good testing instruments. Our association is pressing hard that we need to spend the money so that we can have good tests that are reliable and that produce information in a timely manner. If we're going to measure kids, if we're going to measure the teachers, measure the principals, measure the schools on how well they're doing, then we need to have really good instruments that we're all comfortable with to do that measurement. And so we will be supportive of not cutting in that arena. Although when you're in a tight budget, testing, research, professional growth, those are things you cat or a cut, and we think that that's not appropriate. On the press radio, I happened to go to a church auction Saturday night, and I was going to tell you, you got a quick using anecdotal data. That's one of the problems. You hear a story, and that becomes what's like out there. I go to the church auction, sat next to a third grade teacher from a small district. I got a lot of anecdotal information. But the one thing I will share, I told her what I needed to do today. And she's frustrated with how much time she's put into her job now. She's not quitting, but her husband, who is in business for himself, but said he spends 14 to 30 hours every grading period helping with the work to get the grading ready to go. He's objecting to her workflow. But the use of portfolios, the increased focus on achievement of every youngster and the record keeping has created a workflow that we need to recognize and try to help folks with. On the other hand, you talked with a principal who's done quite a bit of work with the computer and his building and how they're using data, and he's got the information, he's got his school compared to what he believes are the other schools like his, they ought to be comparing progress with, and you see him give a presentation on how he's using the data we have and working with his teachers to find ways to do a better job, and you see why the effort and the data is worthwhile. And our struggle, your struggle, in my view, is keeping our focus on, no matter what you say about the organization, the focus on achievement has increased tremendously over the last 5 years. Every place you go to a meeting with educators, they're talking about how do you help our kids get here, get there. Here's what I'm doing, et cetera. Much more focus on that than there ever has been, I think, in the past. That's a plus. We need to help find ways to find the resources to find the time for training, find the time to do these, whether teachers do it or they get help doing it, the work that needs to be done to support the teaching act in the assessment process. And I think, we know that all youngsters, we know that more time with them is helpful. We know that an extended school year will provide help, extended school day. We know that class size has an impact, but it has a varied impact. But the bottom line is more support for kids who have a difficulty will result in better achievement. And that kind of stuff takes time, which is a resource. And we need to focus on that. We need to challenge, I think you as legislators, when you're publicly discussing these issues, need to take a stronger stand in challenging some of the myths about what's going on or isn't going on in our schools. And this group has visited schools, and you know a little bit about it. A lot of your colleagues haven't. And I have often said I would like to have every legislator spend an entire week inside a classroom, and I want them to make 4 days of it by themselves, by the way. There's one day orientation. You stay there and deal with 25 to 30, whatever the number is, but get a feel for what's going on in the classroom and not function on some of the stories that you... Mr. Chair, I don't think I met your goals, but I think the issue is very important. I think our teachers are... have had a tremendous increase in their workload. I think that most of them have responded admirably, and I think that our schools are in better shape than they were 5 years ago, and they'll be better 5 years from now. And with that, I try to answer questions.
Thank you. This is appropriate we do this today. I didn't know it when we talked last week, but yesterday started Teacher and Principal Appreciation Week. So that's our main object, is trying to find out what, if any, we can do to lessen the frustration on the part of our teachers and principals of implementing the act, and you've done well. Thank you, Susan Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ozzie. It's always great to have you before our committee. About a week ago, I met with about 20 Eugene area teachers, had breakfast on Saturday morning, and we just talked about a bunch of issues, and the issue of all of the testing that's happening, especially like at the fifth grade level. Boy, once we got on that topic, teachers were just passionate about how difficult it is for them right now to meet all of the requirements of all the testing. They said students are in tears, that they're really feeling the pressure of what you know, we're requiring of them with all of this testing. And I'm just wondering how you see it addressing that concern that we're hearing teachers, you know, just really struggling with, and what you would recommend that we look to try and resolve that.
Ms. Chair, Secretary, one, the concept of benchmarks at 3, 5, 8, and 10 are initiatives that policymakers need to know something about the system is it producing. The focus on testing just at those grades shouldn't be the focus. Testing and assessment goes on all the time, and there is work going on in school districts to test in the fourth and the third grades, et cetera. And I think that one of the refocus of our effort, not a decision you need to make, but in the district and through the State Department, our testing effort is that I forget the term for the off-year testing, but that is part of it. It should not be just focused on the 5th, 8th, and 10th grades, which is currently is. Give your story, anecdotes again, if people say, I'm going to get the heck out of that grade, I'm going to teach a different one.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is you still test kids. Mm-hmm. You don't test for this particular battery to test. And I think some of that's going to get smoothed out as we mature. Why are we testing? What are the tests for? And that's what I pointed out earlier. Teachers want to test for different reasons than you're asking them to test as part of their policy making. And trying to get people to understand what data is for and data isn't, to beat up on your data, is a tool to be used. And I think some of that smooths out, but it doesn't totally answer the question of the workload. And also the focus on the other danger we have, as you swing the pendulum between are you testing for achievement or are you testing for growth, you can go too far either way. And mm-hmm. you know, we're testing more and more, but less and less when you focus just on the achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us believe that schools are designed to do more than teach just the things that are on these tests. I think if you go back, and of course, then when we started the public school, it was designed not for the basics, but to create civic responsibility amongst the citizens. And we've lost track of some of that. But the bill we have on the other side that not going anywhere, fortunately, but if you finish high school early in the end of the 11th grade or somewhere, you can go to college and take your basic school support and pay tuition. And that's a policy decision for you. But just ask yourself about the policy. Why are we rushing kids through here when at the other end of the thing, they're retiring fewer, not the first, it's not the first issue, but as a country, people are living longer, et cetera. They need to work longer. Why are we rushing people out here? My youngster could graduate in the 11th grade. I wasn't letting them in. There's other stuff to do, and those are the kinds of policy questions, and we make decisions here that get in the way, I think, of what teachers need to do and want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Arvin.
I think what Professor Castile is just saying goes into the question of staff development kind of thing, is I think when we've moved to the statewide kinds of testing, and we probably need to be emphasizing to teachers how you present tests. I mean, I think you can set a tone in a classroom. I mean, if you say this test is important, it's going to tell how we're doing and how you're doing, and we can go on to next grade and all this sort of stuff, you can develop a lot of fear in the whole thing. I mean, I think that the whole way tests are presented by teachers set a tone, and in ways that students can be from the test, too. So I think that's all part of this. No, I think in teacher training, you should get it, but there should be a re-emphasis constantly for teachers, too. But I think there's a fear, and I understand that. I think teachers are worried that they're going to be evaluated on the basis of the test. And I understand that fear. I mean, I always say, if you give me the right class, I can look very, very good. You know, there are certain years I'd love not to be evaluated. The next year, evaluate me on that class. I mean, it just varies. So I think we need to do a better job with our own in-service programs for teachers and so forth. Because I think we set the tone and we put the fear into people sometimes and we shouldn't. And we've done it with teachers.
Next
question.
I was looking for the minutes because I had it in my first committee this morning from the last state board meeting, Board of Education. And I was interested in their request to move the timelines out. And I was wondering what you thought about that.
Ms. Chair, Sarah Shan, I've been interested in the board, I think, is reluctant to move the names up. Because I think there are some of them at least are concerned and they view it as we're backing off. I think they should move the names up. But again, why are we testing what we do with the data? We don't have those science and social studies tests ready in the way they ought to be. And we ought to slow down and do them early. Again, there is not a huge, MIT. The rush to get it done will be overlooked with the, how do you do it and do it well. And I'm going to share with you the testing issue, whether people are afraid of it or not. I heard a person speak, who runs a testing consulting service, and he had data on 127,000 students from what he calls 90-90-90 schools. These are schools that are 90% on free and reduced lunch, 90% or higher minority, and 90% of the students in all those schools are achieving their standards. And what do they do in those schools? One is they test a lot, weekly assessments, and more opportunities to test, retest, learn, feedback, etc. Testing itself is not, should not be threatening. If it's, again, if you understand why you're testing, if you get data, it helps do something with it. And the other thing about those schools, they're laser-like focused on achievement. That's what we're here for, to get better at what we're doing. But testing itself is a part of it, a weakness. And the more often you test and you reuse information, and those kids aren't afraid of the test. And our focus, we're at grown way out of proportion on the four grades. By the way, I think Denise, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing that. Because you need it for a different reason when you're talking about studying statewide policy. And that's the balance we need to create. That's part of the in-service training. How do we use data? How do teachers use it? And how, what use? We need to make those 3, 5, 8, and 10th grade tests of value to the teacher in the Teaching Act, not just something that they're going to read about in the paper here that you're getting this down here. Part of that is getting information back to them so they can disaggregate it, find out which one of their kids are missing which kind of questions so they know how to change what they need to change down here.
Thank you, Ozzy. Other questions?
I wasn't finished.
Sorry.
Because I just want to say that I agree with you because what's going to happen? You can just predict it as much as night and day. They're going to rush through this. They're going to do it halfway. And pretty soon, somebody's going to stand up and say that people will listen to the emperor has no clothes. This isn't working. We didn't do it right. And I wish there was a bill we could vote for that. I now have the minutes from the state ordinance. Two school districts asked that their time be extended because they weren't ready. And bottom line to me, and I just want to say this on the record, I don't think she cares. Jody Fisher is a school board member at Woodburn. Her daughters, her kids are all bright and head, and her daughter in the 10th grade skipped school the day she had to take the test, assessment test, but she's scared to death. And you can say that the teacher didn't prepare them right. You can say whatever you want. That's happening all over the state. The good kids and the kids that care about school, they're scared to death of these, and we're not doing something right. And I think that we should sit down, listen, like Senator Castillo said, listen to these teachers, take their concerns seriously, because every teacher that I've talked to said, if you would put this on the ballot, we'd get rid of it in a minute, because it's not doing what it was, you know, all those goals in the beginning. We said, the smartest kids in the world, and you know, first class or whatever it was, our kids. And I just think that there's something amiss with it, and somebody with open minds that are saying, I'm not wanting to get rid of it, but at least we're going to extend it so we can get it right, should be listened to.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Mr. Rose.
Senator.
I believe I read in the Oregonian last week that you were one of the folks who took the, maybe you weren't.
I don't know.
The STEM test.
Well, I took it.
Yeah, did you do that?
No.
Or?
No.
No, ma'am.
You never catch me doing that.
Okay. All right. Let me adjust this question then. I think that after having read that article, that is something that we should do as legislators. And, in fact, I'm going to circulate that same Oregonian exam to our members of the Senate this week. And, you know, those of you who feel so inclined, let's do it. You know, let's give ourselves that experience. That said, Sister Rose, what would be the, let's say, three things that you would hope this legislature would accomplish, this being the last legislative session of this century? What are the three things you would hope that we would accomplish that would advance education reform as we know it and have been talking about it?
Mr. Senator Corley, first of all, I did not volunteer to take the census, but I have advocated that all legislators take it on a number of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not going to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Three things off the top of my head. One, I would suggest that we not, through legislative act, change what we've been challenged to do. Two, I would hope that you fund us adequately so that we can do some things in training, get some things with summer school, some things with extended school day. And three, I would hope you set the stage for a debate amongst Oregonians about what level of resources they want to provide. I don't know that Oregonians want to provide the level of resources that I believe are necessary to do what you're struggling with a budget for this year, this biennium, but I believe if you have seen any of the work on the next biennium, that you have a bigger problem down the road. That's an issue for the people of Oregon, and I think it's an honest debate that needs to be held. We are finally fully at the end of the impact of reducing our property tax the way we did. And we need to have a discussion about and if we don't want to provide more than a certain level of resources, we're going to have to rethink what we want to do for education and other services. And again, I'm not just asking for money for schools in that sense. I believe any honest person that looks at the data knows that you have a problem long-term, and Oregonians have a problem. They have to debate. And I hope that coming out of here, we have a shot at an honest debate over the next 2 years to help make that decision.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ozzie. And members, schedule someone else to come before us next week, too, if you so indicate you know the person that could help us understand. And Ozzie, I appreciate Senator Gurley asking those three questions because that was going to be your next assignment, but you've already taken care of it. So thank you very much, and I will close the informational hearing, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 751. Senator Lynn, please.
Thank you. Okay. May I bring my staff member?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Deputy Chair Hartung and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Lynn, State Senator from District 11. Last time we testified that for the Senate Bill 751, before I begin my testimony, the manual on school uniform, I ordered 10 copies of this manual from the Department of Education of the federal government. They are sending us 100 copies, and when it comes, I will give it to each legislator for the House and Senate. As I read this manual, I'm even more convinced that this is a good thing. Even federal government, even President Clinton, support the school uniform. When we had a public hearing on the Senate Bill 761, there have been raised a couple of questions, and I like to address those questions. First, constitutionality of whether the school uniform violates a free expression. And that has been challenged that through the school district of Long Beach in California, and then that the U.S. District Judge Emmanuel Rowell ruled that the school uniform did not violate the right to improve the expression. And at the same time, that yes, there are more than 70,000 school children in the Long Beach School District. Only 1% decide to opt out. Second question also raised, why do we need this bill? Already some schools in our, the state already they are doing it, and why do we need this bill? This bill meant to give local district assurance that if they choose to implement school uniform policy, they will be doing so with express consent of the state. To those who say that this is not needed because some schools have already accomplished the school uniform, then I would say then there is no reason to oppose this bill. Another that the question raised, it will be very expensive to buy a new uniform. According to the study we have done, this is less expensive. It will cost maybe $50 per person. Sometimes those students who can afford to buy, we provide a special fund by fundraising event through the business people or parents. There has been a big problem providing some extra helping hand to those students who can afford. And when I was going to school, I have 5 children in my family. Always I ended up second clothing. My brother wore it, and 1 year later I took over. It was not bad when it goes to my other brother. It was even more so. So all 5 of our children took advantage of the situation. I believe that the graduating students, when they graduate, they can always sell or give it to the other, junior students. To me, in our country, we all know we got problem in education. Safety is a big issue. That the high performance is an issue. Let's do something about it. If this is a proven record that in our country, that even including Washington, when they wear school uniform, they perform better, less peer pressure, and there are more safety. This is all good things. You cannot find out anything bad. And there has been some the concerns about definition of gang clothing. We are taking that out. So with dash one amendment, we can address that the two issues we have been discussed. I think this is a good deal. Let's do some favor for ourselves, for the teachers, and for our children, for their future. We gotta do something about it. I believe this is the thing we need to be done. I want require them to wear the school uniform. I think it would be better, but this year we didn't do that. It is optional for the school and the school district whether they are going to take advantage of this school uniform system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. We are in work session, members, and if you have any questions you'd like to direct to the senator, please do it. Okay. Any do I hear a motion on Senate Bill 751?
I move Senate Bill 751. Okay. I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 751.
Okay, Senator, tell us what the dash one amendments do.
Can you explain? I will report to Mark, my staff.
Certainly.
Explain dash one amendments.
For the record, my name is Mark Bigger, B-I-G-G-E-R. Basically, the amendment sets forth some concerns that we had in the prior open public meeting. In line 18 and 19 of the original Senate Bill 751, it also includes provisions to allow public schools, prohibit schools from wearing gang-related clothing. There were some questions that would be too difficult to enforce that and discover what exactly is gang-related clothing, that it was too broad. So we struck that out. So now this bill only applies to school uniforms. And also down in line 25, it it allows the parents of a child to request in writing the district to allow their child to opt out from the requirement of wearing school uniforms. And our bill, and the Dash 1 amendment, clarifies that the district must grant that request.
Okay, thank you. Senator, what does your amended 751 do in regarding uniforms that we can't do now under existing law?
This will give more assurance, and this will give more flexibility. And so I think with this amendment, this will make even better.
Okay. Other questions for the Senator? Okay, thank you. Even though in the work session I am going to allow a person from ACLU and the Juvenile Rights Project, that would be Andrea and Kathy, please come forward. Thanks, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, is the Oregon School Boards Association represented here today?
John Marshall is here, yes. We can have him come up too if you'd like.
Please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can join the two parties there. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I appreciate the Chair and the committee letting us address some of the amendments and the concerns that we have.
Excuse me. I think what we'll do is we will amend the bill so we can speak to it. And Senator Shannon has moved the Dash 1 amendment. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Dash 1 amendment.
I appreciate the attempt to try to rectify some of the concerns expressed by the ACLU, which will oppose such legislation because we do believe that it infringes on free expression. But there are still some concerns with the legislation as written with the Dash 1. And I do want to respond, if I may, to Senator Lynn's discussion about the constitutionality and the fact that it appears to have been upheld in California. I suspect, having not looked at that, but it was brought in federal court, but that's under the federal constitution. And the Oregon Constitution has a different free expression clause, and it's been held to a much different, higher standard than the federal. So I'm not sure that it would necessarily pass muster under the Oregon Constitution. In addition to the discussion that this bill isn't needed, the one thing that, at a minimum, this bill needs is to include financial provisions for those who cannot afford it. I assume from the way the bill is now drafted that it is speaking only to school uniforms. There was some discussion last time the bill was addressed whether it was school uniforms and a dress code. Speaking only to school uniforms, it is essential that the money be provided so that every child can afford a school uniform, and not putting it to the hopes that enough money will be raised through fundraising mechanisms. In addition, whether it's a school uniform or a dress code, I want to make sure that the committee is aware that we also don't want kids who can't afford these to be marked in some way. For instance, if it was just a dress code and it said you had to wear brown pants, green pants, blue shirt, white shirt, we wouldn't want only children who can't afford to get a voucher at one specific store so that they're earmarked by the fact that they're closed, or that everyone knows they're closed.
Senator, I have a question.
The store.
Are you familiar with the Dish 4? It's all migrant kids, and they have a dress code, and they left.
Well, I'm not familiar with the school.
It's out here in my Brooks, right. And the parents love it, the kids love it, the teachers and the principal. It's a small school, but they went voluntarily to a dress code. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they are, you know, migrant workers, before, and they love it.
Well, I know that in Jervis, there is an issue right now because neither the parents nor the students, and I'm not speaking of all of them, and there are some who will support it, there's no question, but there are those who don't, who have objected to the way it's been implemented, that there is no financial one of the major
problems. I think that you're, you know, going out on a limb where the people that really have it, that's not an issue. It's something that you might think would happen, could happen, hope happens, so you can kill it, but the people that are doing it, that isn't a problem.
No, Senator, I'm not trying to put a poison into this. I think the ACLU will not support dress codes, but I think at a minimum to have a bill come out of committee that at least addresses some of the fundamental concerns, which is if you're going to do this, then you have to put the financial resources there for children so that they can afford it. Public education is to be free. That's our concern that I want to point out.
Yeah, one more. And that is that are you aware of the unwritten rule around here that if you ask for and go after amendments, then you do it so you'll support the bill? So for us to amend the bill to somebody that's never going to support it, I mean...
Well, Senator, no, I'm not particularly familiar.
Maybe we can come back with it. Let's hear from the other two parties, and if you have something else to add. Is it okay if I move Kathy now? Andrea? Yes. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the recommending Ms. Kathy Osborne from Juvenile Rights Project, and we did not support this bill in the first draft because of the gang related clothing, which I acknowledge has been taken out. My concern that about that is still the whereas clauses, which have not been taken out. Although those would not go into law, those would be seen as legislative intent, and the legislative intent behind this would be the fact that gang regalia disrupts the learning environment, which I would say that I don't think has any evidence has been presented to this body that gang regalia, without a definition of what gang regalia is actually disruptive of the learning environment. It also says that it's hazardous to the health and safety, again, without a definition of what gang-related apparel is. It seems to me that it would be appropriate to also amend out the whereas clauses to make sure that that is not seen as the legislative intent behind this language, since we have not, since the actual wording of gang-related clothing was taken out because it is so broad, we also need the whereas clauses taken out because those are just as broad and carry just as much of a problem when that's what you're talking about.
Okay, Kathy says, well, I understand you just say that you would not support the bill unless all of the whereas are taken out.
That would be correct.
Okay, thank you. John, excuse me, any other questions, members?
All right, so they're all finished.
Okay. John, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. Senate Bill 751 does not impose any new requirement on school districts, nor does it limit our ability to impose either a dress code, a uniform dress requirement, or a uniform requirement. Existing law grants the power to school boards a very broad latitude to establish rules concerning the conduct of a school. I know of no school district or school in the state that does not have a dress code. There are requirements, for example, that skirts must be a certain length, that boys, for example, can't wear sleeveless T-shirts, short shorts. I mean, let your imagination run wild about the kinds of clothes that kids would wear to school if they thought they could get by with it. Every school, certainly every high school and middle school, I would guess, have a dress code. The schools that I'm aware of that have moved to what many consider uniforms are not uniforms at all. It's a uniform dress requirement. You can only wear a short or long sleeve polo shirts of a certain color, chinos or Dockers, whatever kind of a slash you want to call them, of certain colors. Salem Kaiser, I think, has led the state in terms of imposing that uniform dress requirement upon their students. That process was taken after a number of countless hours of meetings with parents and the school community to assure that what they were doing had the support of the parents that were going to be responsible, of course, for making sure that their kids complied. As far as I know, that has worked extremely well. There can also be situations where you can require uniforms. And this is what we might think of when we think about the New England prep schools with little blazers and plaid skirts or whatever, you know, that's sort of the traditional picture that we might have. There's nothing to prevent school boards from doing that. I know of no school district that has considered going that far in terms of requiring some kind of a uniform. Again, there are uniform dress code requirements. As far as Senate Bill 751, I think we've made it clear that this creates no additional requirement. It's something that we can already do, but if you wish to proceed with Senate Bill 751, we certainly wouldn't stand in its way.
Thank you. Questions for members of the panel?
I just have one comment.
Certainly.
To say that that it's kind of a prejudice to some people, that's what I heard about that gang quarreling, that there's no proof. I mean, I talked to people trying to solve the gang problem here in Marion County, police and the educators, and they are convinced there's a relationship. So it just amazes me if someone would think there's no relationship.
Other questions for the panel?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I would just like to clarify some things on the record, if I may, with the panel and whoever feels they have a response, if you would, please. This is probably for Mr. Marshall. How many school boards are there?
198.
How many of them have adopted a uniform policy or have and/or have a dress code?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, I couldn't say. Of 198 school districts, I believe that high schools, for example, and middle schools, and perhaps even elementary schools, might have their own student handbook with their own specific dress codes.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be a district-wide policy, and then what we call administrative regulations for each school district, that's where those regulations might be encompassed in a student handbook, for
mm-hmm.
example. But in terms of the numbers, I couldn't tell you. In terms of those schools that have adopted a uniform dress code, the only school district that I'm aware of that's done that is Salem. There may be others, but that's the one that that I'm most familiar with.
Takeda has.
In terms of the Oregon School Boards Association selected sample policy that you shared with us earlier, do we have any idea how many school boards have adopted at least that piece? And it is voluntary.
Senator Gordon, I really don't know. Again, those policies appear to apply to those school districts that have moved towards some kind of a uniform dress code.
Mm-hmm.
There still may be policies that set up a dress code that each school district or each individual school must comply with. But as far as the numbers, I don't have that information at hand.
That's helpful to me because I was trying to recall from our earlier hearing back on the 9th if we had received any testimony that helped us understand how many districts are implementing something or have some kind of requirement or some kind of voluntary practice. But we don't have those numbers is what you're telling me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, again, I would conjecture that every single high school and probably middle school in the state has a dress code in their student handbook.
Okay.
Beyond that, if we go down to a uniform dress, what I'll call a uniform dress requirement, I think there are just a handful that have gone that far. And by uniform dress code, that means you can't wear a T-shirt that has an advertisement for alcohol or tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, and in some schools, in some communities where there's been an identified problem with gangs and identified with those gangs are certain pieces of clothing, those schools and school districts have outlawed the wearing of that kind of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, in fact, that's even gone so far as to be what we might used to call the Letterman jacket.
All right.
Because they've been identified with gangs.
If I may follow up with one last question, then with your familiarity of this OSBA selected sample policy and looking at the bill before us as it has just been amended, is there anything in the bill that you see as an enhancement or as a support of the existing sample policy?
I think what I see in the bill is a provision which says school district board, if you adopt a policy that requires school uniforms, then here are some criteria you have to follow. And the criteria, of course, is the exemption that the uniform selected shall be determined by parents, staff, etc., and no pupil who is exempt from wearing the uniform will be penalized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. I move Senate Bill 751 to the floor as amended to reduce out. Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Marshall a question before we do that?
Okay. Yes. Let's have the bill in front of us a minute.
Oh, okay.
John, sit down, please. Senator Shannon moves the amended Senate Bill 751 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And now we're in discussion.
Thank you.
Senator.
I was just wondering, how many of your members are saying or reporting that they're getting pressure to institute uniforms in their districts? I mean, is this something that you're hearing your members say they're getting parents coming to them and voicing that they would like to have uniforms in your districts? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Castillo, as far as my phone, I have not received a single call. I think the tragedy in Colorado suggests that maybe school people, and by that I mean school principals, may begin to take a closer look around their hallways and seeing what kids are wearing, whether or not there's any affiliation with what they're wearing and any kind of violent tendencies, et cetera. I mean, I think this whole situation has caused folks to begin to look. I would expect that out of this may come some more stringent requirements relative to dress codes. I think there are always discussions about uniform dress codes, you know, with, again, with the polo shirts and the khakis. I think that's a discussion that's going on all the time, particularly in schools and communities where there's been gang violence or some kind of exhibited violent behavior on the part of gang members, either on school property or around the school or in the neighborhood or in the community. I think these are things that people are constantly thinking of. But as far as any knowledge of a great deal of activity in this area of recent, I can't point to any.
Okay. Other questions of the panel? Discussion, Senator Duncan.
Discussion, Mr. Chair. This is a tough bill.
Thank you, members. You may be excused.
Okay. I think it's a tough call. I am very supportive of the school district board of directors and that community doing what they want to do on this thing, and they would have to battle their own, like the CCIU or somebody else locally. I think that would, but that's the way it is right now. I guess I look at this bill, I look at it over and over and over, and I don't see anything wrong with it. I don't see where it's really needed. I worry about the signals either way we go right now. If we reject it, then are we sending the signal to the school district, the legislature doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry about the headline tomorrow as we pass it that says that we were pushing for it. That's really been helpful discussion, I'm sure, for what I just made. It's not a comment. I think that's the dilemma we're in.
Did you get your bumper sticker today from seeing your coupon?
No.
Are you worried about the papers?
No. I'm thinking about as a local school district out there, so I can think how the local district's going to do it. But I probably will vote for it at this point because there's no harm in doing it.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo, and then Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I think, we've heard several people say that we can do this now, and in fact, I think the school district that you were just talking about, Senator Shannon, they're doing it now, and the district can do this under current law. I don't see a need for this bill, and I don't think that not passing it just says we're staying with current law, we're leaving it up to local school districts to make that decision for what works in their community. So I feel very comfortable living with what we have now.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you. I'm pleased that we had the amendment before us that clarifies that parental requests that child be exempted shall be granted, and that we also are deleting the prohibition against wearing gang-related clothing. So but I'm concerned that what we didn't catch at, up to this point is that the whereases still remain in the bill that refer to gang regalia, gang affiliation, et cetera. Now, I would be the first one to say that gang-related clothing is an issue in our schools and in our communities. I've worked with gang-affected youth, so I know that that's an issue and a problem. But in terms of the bill before us, and the bill before us, the language being consistent, the whereas is being consistent with the amendment we just passed, it isn't. And so if, unless we clean that up, I can't support the bill as it is before us. And I may hear someone say, well, it'll be cleaned up in the House. Well, it may or may not be. But with that concern, I won't be able to support the bill as it is currently in front of us.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Well, I do. I do have.
Certainly.
And I don't think it is. I don't understand what this is about not recognizing that being related clothing affects how children act to each other, and that's exactly why they wear it. And I used to teach a Job Corps, and kids, their students asked questions about my own children. And when I showed them pictures, they said, oh, yeah, they don't smoke pot. They don't care. They could see just by the look. And yet I couldn't judge them where they looked, but they judged each other. And so I don't think that is a problem, and I think that we are at the end of hearing Senate bills, and that I think we need to send this over and hope that it gets fixed in the House and write letters. Write a letter to them and want this fixed, because you know, we're not supposed to be hearing Senate bills in the
Senator Duncan. I'm just wondering, I have reread that whereas, and I wonder, can we dare ask Senator Lynn a question at all?
Well, certainly, if you want Senator Lynn to come forward.
Well, would the Senate be willing to remove the whereas?
Mr. Chair, the Senator Connor and John Lynn here again from District 11, Senator. Even I just discussed with Mark just a moment ago, this whereas, it is not important to me. The language down there is important. Whether you choose to put it in or take it out, that is not issue to me.
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason I raised that question is I'm glad the Senator really brought that up. I forgot about the whereas. And for example, whereas the adoption of school-wide uniform policy is a reasonable way to provide some protection for students now, therefore, I don't, you know, not even that one statement right there. That is a policy direction from us, mm-hmm. and I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm all for the local board having the right to do what they want to do, but I guess I would not be able to vote for it, listen, whereas it says.
Can we have delete lines?
Senator Lynn, if we, the Senator from Brooks can withdraw her motion, and we can delete line 9 and 10, and then reconsider.
No.
Three through 15.
Mm-hmm.
All the whereas.
Mm-hmm.
All the whereas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought you were talking. All right.
Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable striking out that part.
Okay. Senator Shannon withdraws her motion to send the amended Senate Bill 751 with the you pass recommendation. Any objections? So ordered. And now Senator Shannon moves that Senate Bill 751 further be amended. With the dash 2 number for the header.
No, don't.
Okay. We don't need to refer to any dash number. We move lines 3 through 15. Is there discussion? Is there objection? So ordered. Senator Shannon moves the Senate Bill 751 with the dash 1 amendments and the amendments of removing lines through 15 to the floor of the DuPass recommendation. Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Senator Duncan.
Aye.
Senator
Lynn.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed. Senator Lynn will carry the bill. Thank you very much. Let's see. We'll get back on to our agenda. Should be 9:15. And open a work session on Senate Bill 932. Jan, tell us what we have here.
Senator Hartung, members of the committee, Senate Bill 932 is that bill that would direct the Department of Education to develop guidelines and provide technical assistance to school districts regarding special ed and individualized education plans. Lori Rimmer came and testified that teachers were having trouble with different forms and they would like a uniform form. Lori, my understanding is talked to the Department of Ed, and we have some -1 amendments to consider. And basically, they would change the bill such that school districts who have already developed their own forms, as long as they've been approved by the Department of Education, can continue to use those forms. There was some concern on the part of Portland and Salem, who spent a lot of money developing their own forms. They didn't want to abandon those. And Lori is eager and willing to come up and answer any questions.
Good idea. Lori Wimmer, come to the table, please.
Excuse me. Department of Education,
we'll hear what the lady says here. And we are in work session. I don't know if I mentioned that or not. Welcome, Lori.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Hartung, committee members, for the record, Lori Wimmer, Oregon Education Association. We met with the Department of Education and also spoke with all of the other parties that expressed interest in this bill, including the Oregon School Boards Association, Salem Kaiser School District, and others, and tried to make amendments that would satisfy their concerns and believe that we have a consensus amendment set, with one exception, one of the changes that we had asked LC to draft inadvertently did not get made, and that would be on line 3, the word all. The first word in that sentence would be omitted if it were the druthers of the Department of Ed, and we support that and would hope that we could do that conceptually today. The idea is still the same. It doesn't mean that we will have one universal form for all in the state, because it will grant that option for an alternative to be approved. But we ask that the I still be to minimizing the number of forms and the blizzard of paperwork, and so that in rulemaking process still be the concept that's retained even in the approval of an alternate form.
Thank you. Without objections from the committee, why the chair moves that in line 3, first word all be removed. Is there discussion? Is there questions? Is there objection?
Mr. Chair, of the bill or the
amendment? I'm just talking about the removing.
Of the bill, the amendment.
Of the amendment.
Of the amendment.
Yeah.
Line 3.
Line 3, the all. It okay. Reads a little differently.
All right.
Any objections? Okay. Seeing none, so ordered. And now, chair moves Senate Bill, the amendments, the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 932, with the note that the bill was further amended, the amendments were further amended, by taking the word all out of the line 3 amendment. Any objection?
I have a question.
Yeah. Chair's prerogative.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Lori Wimmer got away before got my question in. I need to know if Portland Public Schools was also consulted. You didn't mention them in your list of people that you talked to about the amendments.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, they came to the OSBA lobbyists and voiced their concerns, and though I did talk to them as well, they didn't offer any amendments, but did get to see the draft beforehand, and I have not been apprised of any concerns further on their part either.
So then, are they supportive or non-supportive?
It was my understanding that they would not oppose the bill with those amendments.
Would not oppose?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
I don't have a specific, I don't have any writing from them.
Further questions, Lars? Thank you. We are in work session, and
for the chair moves the...
Mr. Chair, didn't you say the Department of Ed was going to respond?
Well, I understood that... Lori, come back again, please. And for the record, the Department of Education is amenable to the Dash 1 amendments with all removed, and so they will... they are supportive of the bill as amended.
Chair Hartung, that's my understanding. I just spoke with Greg McMurdo from the department earlier, and he said they would be fine as long as that word all was removed.
Okay. Other questions?
Thank you. Be sure that I didn't see him. Well, there's Anita back there.
I think he's testifying in health ed right now.
Okay. All right. Other questions for Laura? Okay, Senator Courtney, you were on Senate Bill 932. We just adopted the Dash 1 amendments, and we have further amended the amendments in committee by removing the word all from line 3. And Laura Winner has just testified that they, all of the stakeholders are satisfied with this bill. And so we have before us a motion to adopt the bill and send it forth to be passed. Do you have any questions?
I do not.
Okay. The clerk will call the roll on a DPAS recommendation on Senate Bill 932 as amended with a DPAS recommendation.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator George?
Yes.
Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Aye. Motion is passed. Any volunteers for carriers? Senator George?
Sounds a lot like the bill this morning, doesn't it?
Well, yes. Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 932. What do you want to go to next? Okay, we'll go to Senate Bill 870 and open a work session. Jan, tell us what we have here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 870 is the bill that would direct the Department of Education to establish a statewide child care provider training program that would educate child care providers on the importance of healthy brain development in the first 3 years of a child's life. We have two sets of amendments to consider. The Dash 1 amendments are from Senator Boardley, I believe, and direct the Department of Education to establish a statewide child care provider training program in conjunction with the Child Care Division, the State Commission on Children and Families, and the Oregon Center for Career Development in Childhood Care and Education. Senator Shields has also brought forth the Dash 3 amendments, and those direct the Department of Education to establish, in coordination with existing training systems, a statewide child care provider training program. The program would include identification of risk factors and behaviors that indicate a child may need special education, mental health treatment, appropriate referrals for a child who is at risk of becoming involved in the criminal justice system. And also the Department of Education is to establish a program in partnership with the Institute on Violence and Destructive Behavior, the Child Care Division, the State Commission on Children and Families, and the Oregon Center for Career Development in Childhood Care and Education.
Mr. Chair, are we in work session?
We are.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 870.
Senator Gordley moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 870. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 870.
Senator Gordley moves the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 870. Is there discussion? Let's see, I've got a Dash 2. Is that taken up in 3? Or?
No, that's abandoned.
Oh, okay. We're
first presentation. So where the two differ, is it your intention to go with the Dash 3 language?
Yes.
Okay, so we go ahead and pass the Dash 3 and withdraw the Dash 1? How do we accomplish that?
Well, I think if we adopted both of them, that the list of state agencies would just be a little longer. I think all the ones that are listed in the dash ones are listed in the dash three, and so I don't think they would necessarily conflict.
That's right.
Is that the agreeable, Senator?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, there's further discussion on the dash three amendments. Is there any objection to adopting the dash three amendments? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Senator Gordley?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 870 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 870 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Raise the knee.
Raise the knee.
Raise
the knee. Is there a discussion? Senator.
Do we have any idea how much line 16 of the first page of the bill? I don't think that was deleted. They charge child care providers a fee for continuing this program. Do we have any idea what that's going to work out to be? Because this is a pretty complex bill now. There's a lot of individuals that are going to have to pick up the full tab on all that.
I don't know. Senator Gordley, do you have any idea about that?
I hope this answers that question partially, Senator George. I'm hoping that you all have a copy of a memorandum from the Oregon Employment Department dated April 25th, 1999. And I don't know if Annette Talbot is in the room. Would you like to come up and speak to this with the sheriff's permission?
Certainly.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Annette Talbot, legislative coordinator with the Employment Department, and with me is Tom Olson, administrator of the Child Care Division. The committee staff is handing out an amendment that we did that the committee could consider how many types of scholarships they might offer, which is actually not what Senator, I think, George referred to on line 21, page 1, line 21 of the printed bill. Is the reference to the actual cost that the Department of Education would have for the curriculum. And I believe they have submitted a fiscal, at least that I've got a draft copy of. And I think they are here and they could speak to that. Our piece of the bill, which is Section 4, would be for purposes of scholarships, which is what our memorandum addresses that Senator Gordley was referring to. And we could certainly offer scholarships to as many people as you would like us to in terms of funds available. We currently find that over 25% of our child care provider community do request waivers for purposes of income of the registration fee. And we do have some studies that suggest that child care workers also are pretty much in the minimum wage, a little bit above category, so they don't have particularly high incomes. So we gave some examples. If you wanted to offer it to 10%, that would be about 72,000 of the providers, and if you wanted to go up to the 25% mark, you know, it would be up into the 181,000. We would certainly do whatever funds were available we would offer, but we wanted to make you aware of the kinds of information you might consider in deciding how much money to make available.
Thank you. Questions of Annette? Sir George.
When you look at the list on the dash three amendments particularly, has anyone calculated what we expect all of these folks to have to spend on this? Or do you think it'll be a quick process of them pulling together what they have and then just providing that to the people doing the instruction?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, are you requesting information on how much we expect to charge the providers for the class?
Well, we have Department of Agriculture, okay, dash three, do you have a dash three?
Uh-huh.
Okay, when you look at the list, the Institute for Violence and Destructive Behavior at the University of Oregon, and then we have a list of other folks who are participating. That's going to establish costs for them, or do you expect that to be a very simple process? Or do they already have ideas developed and they just transfer them for this process, or are you going to have to develop whole programs?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that any of the entities referenced have submitted any kind of fiscal other than the Department of Education, which will actually have this lead staff role in developing the curriculum. We do all kinds of things in partnerships with other agencies, so perhaps the Department of Education could speak to that.
Yeah, please do. Welcome. Identify yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. For the record, Anita McClanahan from the Oregon Department of Education, Director for Early Childhood Programs. And in direct response to your question, Senator George, when we analyzed this bill and the partnership collaboration piece, we did not anticipate that there would be additional funding necessary for that. We do quite a fair amount of work currently with the partners that are mentioned here, and typically what occurs in a partnership relationship, we call the meeting, each agency supports their staff person to come and be a part of that design for the work that would be necessary. So we would anticipate that partnership or collaboration would continue in that direct kind of way.
Thank you very much.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Let's see. We have a motion before us. There's a further discussion on the motion. And that motion is that Senate Bill 870 as amended, -1 and -3 amendments be sent to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Motion is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes. Oh. No, we haven't done that. We have. We haven't done the entry today. Put that drop from the Senator, let's see, we'll close the work session on 870 and reopen the work session on Senate Bill 932, and Senator Castillo requests that she be recorded as an aye vote on that bill. Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
I vote on that myself.
Did Senator Courtney move on that? No. Vote on 932.
Great. Got it. Don't worry. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
All right. No problem. So I'll close the work session on 932 and open the work session on... And so I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 428. Senator Courtney?
Gary, I think Carlson wants to make a quick statement. Then you also have in your packet the letter from the Department of Education, which unfortunately comes in late, but it says no. Gary, would you like to come up and just make your statement? Please, can I ask Mr. Cherry to make a statement?
Certainly.
Gary, why don't you make your statement about the certain amendments you didn't get and your feelings on it, and then we can...
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary Carlson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. There are actually two amendments I think that we asked for that you've not dealt with. One were the -1s, and the -6s have been recast to the -9s, which you should have in front of you to correct an error in the -6s. And those are, perhaps you'd like to take those first and do a -1 later at your suggestion.
All right. Senator Courtney, what's your pleasure?
Are these consensus amendments, Gary, or your amendments?
No, these are outside of the consensus amendments, which are 1-5, I guess. Is this -5?
Let's see, this would be perfectly clear on that. Gary, you've followed this closely. What have we adopted?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is you have adopted the consensus amendments.
-5.
You rejected the -8s. The 1s and 6s have not been dealt with. I'm sorry, I don't recall -7s if they were dealt with.
-7 was adopted.
5 and 7 were adopted.
Okay.
5 and 7 were adopted. We did not adopt 8, and we have before us now 1 and 6.
1 and 9. 9 replaces 6.
1 and 9. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I'd start with the dash fixes.
Please, yes.
This is the issue of financing of this program, and I would say the dash fixes clarify the proposal as we brought it in from the original draft. We asked that the bill be drafted in a way that would pretty much implement the dash 9. I think it was sufficiently unclear that we asked to have it clarified in this amendment to the bill. And I guess the issue here is whether or not the support, the public sector support for these students is going to be basically go to one educational institution or the other. And obviously, typically in other states like Minnesota, students will take maybe one or two classes, typically. Kay and I should take one or two classes at community college or some other institution of higher education. But they are permitted, and they would be permitted in this bill, to go for all of their class time day to a higher education institution, community college, if you will, or state system of higher education. The dash nines, and it was one page, sort of follow the money description, clarifies for you the difference between the dash fives and the dash nines. The dash fives, the so-called consensus amendments, would provide the basic school formula to the K-12 district. In the instance of a full-time student going to a community college, the K-12 district would pay the tuition roughly $1,600 out of that allocation from the formula. In addition, they would pay for books and materials, an estimated $200 or maybe higher, maybe low, leaving $2,800 with the district. The community college then for this student, in the instance of a full-time student, would receive the tuition from the K-12 district, $1,600. And in addition, the student would count towards the state general fund allocation for the community college for a total public cost of $6,900. Our intent with this bill was to have true marketplace choices, decisions made by the students and their parents. And the dash fives, if you will, are a little bit like setting up a competitive environment, but the consumer has to pay twice, or in this case, 1 2/3 times the actual cost of the product to two different vendors. The dash nines then, as we originally proposed in this bill, would provide that 10% administrative holdback in the instance of a student that went full-time or prorated down based on the number of credits the student would be taking outside of the high school environment. But in the case of a full-time student, a 10% administrative holdback to cover those administrative costs of the student who is not there. The community college then, under the dash 9, would receive the tuition from the K-12 district on behalf of the student, and in addition would receive the balance of $2,340, that is less only the $200 estimated for books, or $3,940 for the support of that student now in community college. The books for $200 leaves a total of $4,600, approximately the current state allocation under the K-12 distribution formula. So that is the issue, as clear as I could try to make it for you. The dash nines, I should point out, treat other higher ed institutions, and namely the Oregon University system, differently, because they stated before you here last week that they were satisfied to simply receive the tuition payment on behalf of the student from the K-12 district and the books, and that they would see this program where it is used as a door opener for these students, and an opportunity for the higher ed institution to have an opportunity to encourage these students to attend their institution following graduation from high school. Mr. Chairman, one other issue that I think is on point is that there are students who drop out of high school simply because they do not fit in the high school environment, who are very capable of doing college-level work. We brought one such young man before you early in the session, whose testimony I'm sure you remember, and he is certainly not alone. I have come to understand as we've discussed this issue, that there are a significant number of very bright students who do not fit and have dropped out of high school. There are no public resources going to support those students who drop out of the system today, and this program would bring them back into the system. That, I think, Mr. Chairman, concludes my comments on the Josh Neinberg Agenda.
Would you just stay right there, Bill Gary?
Certainly.
Senator Courtney, what's your pleasure?
My pleasure is to move the bill to waive the means.
As amended, -1-9, or no amendments?
As it is. She worked the bill, the committee worked the bill, the work groups worked the bill. I called poor Jan McComb over the weekend and called me back in the end of the weekend to try to find out. It started to occur to me that there's probably an economic impact here, a less than a physical impact, if you know what I'm saying. And this letter, or this statement by Gary Carlson points it out. The student, whether you go with 5 or whether you go with 9, in addition, we had the Sam Bunn letter, which I did not expect to come in on top of me, on my head. So I'm saying, move the bill to Ways and Means because Jan wasn't able to come up with a statement. We went after Revenue Office, to try to figure things out, And so, in my opinion, the bill, once and for all, to work their tails off. We haven't been able to ever reach that magic moment of closure. The committee's divided on it, so my motion is going to be to move the Ways and Means. If that fails, it's over. So I'm out. I'm not going to do anything further on it.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 428 to Ways and Means with a due pass.
I don't think they do pass. Let's see what happens.
As amended.
As amended. Is there discussion? And I assume we've amended with the -5 and -8.
They were the consensus amendments. They were a consensus amendment. Then the other things that Gary's been talking about were added things that he wanted that were not the consensus amendment. So I think I could say 5. Everybody was together on 5. It's just the different groups. OEA wanted something. They didn't get it. Gary wanted some additional things. He didn't get it, if you know what I mean. And so the 5s and the 7s, I think, are all right. Because the 7s were the school boards. So they got that. And I don't know if that blew everybody's mind or not. I guess it did. I guess the school boards caused some problems. So that's where we're at. Next thing is that that's my position.
Okay, one more question. You did a good job with the consensus group. The consensus group has not considered the -1 or the -9s, as far as you know?
I think we did. We talked about it in this sort of free-for-all atmosphere, if you know what I mean. And we struggle and struggle on that, on these general concepts. We couldn't come to agreement as to whether or not it saves money or it doesn't save money, to be very frank with you, who's ox to gore or however you want to call it. And so I'd say, in theory, I think we did discuss it, whether we didn't have this exact sheet that Gary just presented. Yeah, this is the first time Gary, I think, presented the sheet. He's nodding yet. But Gary did not have this exact sheet that he presented to the group to say, okay, right or wrong, up or down. So I do want to say that. But I think the general concept is possible.
Okay. Senator Gordon?
Yes. The Stan Bunn letter has been referred to, but I think for the record, we need to be clear that this is a record of opposition from the superintendent. And while I am prepared to move a bill along, Senator Courtney, to Ways and Means, I would like to hear something back from Mr. Carlson on a particular statement that is contained in the Bunn letter. On the second page, and do you have a copy, Mr. Carlson?
Yes, I think I do, yes.
Okay, on that second page in the first paragraph, Mr. Bunn points out that if some students decide to enroll outside the high school for courses such as upper-level calculus or foreign language, our high schools will have a diminished capacity to offer such classes to those students staying at the high school. And then goes on to say this could also bring questions of equity regarding socioeconomics. I believe that you have a responsibility today with the bill before us in this form to say something about this socioeconomic issue. We've talked about it briefly in my office, but I think for the record, how do you respond to the issue that the superintendent is raising?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, we respectfully disagree with the statement of the superintendent. We think this bill is designed to give more opportunity to young people. We disagree also with the statement that this bill would damage the CAM. We think it is part of the CAM to allow these young people who are capable of doing college-level work to move ahead, to advance themselves more quickly through the educational process, and to achieve those higher levels as quickly as they are able. I would relay to you, I think, the experience in the state of Minnesota, which I would wager is probably replicated in the state of Washington, is that when schools, when any entity is presented with a competitive environment, they're going to meet that competition. What has happened in the state of Minnesota since the initiation of this program is that the number of advanced placement courses doubled since the program went into effect. What that means simply is that the school, the K-12 district, the high schools in particular, are reaching out to the students and their families regarding what it is that they want and need. And they're attempting to meet those needs to meet, in essence, the competition. Mm-hmm. So we do respectfully disagree with the view of the superintendent on this matter.
I appreciate you commenting on that. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? The motion is that we send the amended Senate Bill 428 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. I better make note that the bill has been amended with the dash 5 and dash 7 amendments. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Brzezik?
Aye.
Senator
Brzezik?
Aye. No.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is passed. Close the hearing on Senate Bill 42.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say thank you to the committee and particularly to Senator Courtney for his efforts to bring this bill to conclusion. I appreciate it.
And I will check with the joint chairs, Senator Gordon and I, on the Ways and Means Sub on Education and see if we can't get that in front of that subcommittee immediately. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gordon, can I make that?
Sure.
Again, I did vote for it. I still object to the Bill of Rights terminology, because I do not see this as a Bill of Rights deal, and I reserve the right that I may vote against it on the floor.
Quickly on that.
The Ways and Means.
Yeah, I know. So quickly on that point, we had legislation amendment adopted to change it, but legislative council stopped us at the last moment, because if you look at the relating clause specifically says it is a Student Bill of Rights program, so we couldn't change the reference to Student Bill of Rights in the law without violating the relating clause. So that's why Senator Duncan, he tried to do that.
Right, and that's why he made every effort to try, Mr. Chair. That's why I was...
Thank you.
Yes. I just want to enter a vote explanation as well. I voted no because I share the same concerns as expressed by the superintendent in his letter.
Okay. Thank you. Any other vote explanations? Okay, I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 998. And Senator Duncan, after the hearing, I asked you to talk to the two major stakeholders in this. Would you please report to me what you found out or what you would recommend to this committee?
Oh, okay, Mr. Chair. If you recall, 998 stems from the Oregon Center for Business and Economic Education. And this is the one that Dr. Herbert would like to have down at his home area in Florence. And at that time, when I think we had the group from the Oregon Council of Basic Education from Portland State University are testifying against it the other day, and my concern at that time, and I raised it with both of them, was the fact that I felt that this ought to be tied to the Department of Ed, or should be tied to a university of some sort, rather than to with an individual in his home area. Dr. Herbert, at one point I said, would you go to Portland State? You don't want to move. It grants a $400,000 deal. I talked to both of them. It looks like there's still possibility of a meeting of the minds. It's all Portland State is saying, well, you give us $400,000 and we'll put on a great program too, So I guess I object to, and as I told Dr. Herbert, not against the program, it's just that I objected to taking $400,000 and just granting that to an individual program someplace. I like to have it attached to someplace, so there's an RFP, there's some controls with it that way. And so I am coming back to you as one who's saying, it didn't look like it.
they could work it out. Okay. They tried. I got notes back from Portland State. And so I personally, I personally will not be able to support
it. Would you support a move to Ways and Means?
No.
Okay. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have the same concern expressed by Senator Duncan.
Okay. Senator George, you have a feeling or comment on 998?
Mr. Chair, you need to know, I really would like to see my work done in economic education. I think
sure.
That's that. Mm-hmm. It's just the methodology. This is I personally think it's a long way to go about it.
Okay. Senator George?
Well, in the bill, the purpose of the bill, of course, was to address the idea of the concept in some way. We need to, again, begin to instruct children, have our teachers who are properly instructed about the very nature of our economy, and this was one way to attempt to do that.
Senator Castillo, what do you think about this?
Well, I was prepared to support this bill. I thought it was my understanding that Dr. Herbert would be working with Lane Community College at Florence, so I think there was some connection with a institution. Mm-hmm. In Florence. So I know it's not Portland State, but I think there was going to be some working on the campus there. Is that right, in Florence?
Yeah, we've been talking.
Okay. Senator Courtney, do you have a feeling about...
No, I don't.
Okay. Don't want to get a consensus or anything? Well, I'll exercise the chairman's prerogative, and I don't see four votes or passing the bill out, or sending it to Ways and Means, so we will take no action at this time. And it can always be, I didn't table it, if you'd prefer to have it tabled, we can do that, because it can be pulled off the table at any time. For a motion to table, members, or just no action. Okay, seeing no comment, we will not take action on Senate Bill 998, and I'll close the work session and open the work session on Senate Bill 960. And that was Senator Bryant's bill. So, Jan, do you want to remind us what was in this bill?
Sure. Senator Hartung, members of the committee, this is the bill Senator Bryant came down and talked about regarding the lawsuit down in the Ben LaPlaine School District where the school board was sued. Regarding the Bend Community School, when the Bend Community School was first created, the school board gave its blessing, and the school was created, and the students went there voluntarily. And there was a lawsuit brought regarding whether it was appropriate for public funding of what they called a private school. They won the initial lawsuit, and it was appealed. It's up on appeal now. You had a copy of the lawsuit distributed to you. Senator Bryant would like to make the lawsuit go away, essentially, by passing 960. And this proposal to do that would be to eliminate the wording in the statute that requires the school district to determine the necessity of a student attending an alternative education program prior to placement. It was found that the school district made no attempt to interview these students and their parents to see whether an alternative placement would be necessary for their educational needs. And so he would like to eliminate that requirement from the statute for this bill,
such that the community school keeps operating. Before I accept a motion of any kind on this bill, I'd like to discuss it, Senator Duncan.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't completely understand it. Is this going to grandfather in the action that was taken during that two-year period? I don't mind covering an honest mistake, but I guess I don't want it to continue on. And I don't know what this does.
Audrey or John or Jim, do you have a knowledge of exactly that? Oh, of course you don't. Jim, hey, please come to the table.
I think Jim wants to leave the room.
Yeah, that's where I thought he was heading. Yeah.
Jim, I felt that way so many times.
Senator Gorley, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to serve notice that this is a bill that I'm unable to support because it, we're talking about intervening in pending litigation, as I understand it. And I'm very uncomfortable being asked to take on that kind of role. I think there's a possible appearance of impropriety, possible, when the proponent of the legislation is a legislator and attorney advocating for the interest of a private client, which is the situation that we have before us. And when there is an appearance that we as legislators are passing legislation that is intended to or can be perceived as helping one of our own, again, there's that appearance, possible appearance, perception of impropriety. And I'm very, very uncomfortable with that. And for those reasons, we'll not be able to support.
Thank you, Senator. Could you address Senator Duncan's question, either one of you, Ozzie or Jim?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, I believe your question was, does this grandfather in a mistake or...
Let's go back and correct and say, okay, I'll just forgive him for that particular 2-year period or whatever it was. And then it ceases, isn't it?
It doesn't cease in the sense that it removes that language about the reason for which you might put the youngster in the alternative, in that triggering language. It still leaves the decision subject to approval of the school board and so forth, so that, or the school district, so that stays the same. But it does forever remove that triggering. When necessary to meet a student's educational needs and interests, the parent or guardian, da-da-da. If you remove this forever, you won't have to meet that test. It will just be the parent or guardian, with the approval of the resident district, may place them in an alternative program. And we didn't object to it because it still requires the approval of the district. So that's what...
You're supportive of the bill.
Yeah.
And the school boards
doesn't address the issue in the manner that the senator raised.
Okay, because of the lack of numbers here, I'm going to... sure. Do you think the whole committee? I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 960, and we're going to have a 30-second recess. Education Committee, we have one more bill to hear before 3 o'clock, and that would be public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 35. John Marshall, please, and Randall Edwards is on his way.
Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association, appearing before you in strong opposition to Senate Bill 635. I'm pleased that the proponents of this measure are going to visit with you because we're anxious to find out exactly what the problem is that this bill purports to solve. We have some comments that we'd be pleased to make, but hopefully we can make those after we get a better sense of why this bill is here and what it hopes to accomplish.
Thank you. While we're waiting for Representative Edwards, Ozzie, could you comment on 635, please, Senator Bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the Director of Ozzie Girls Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I'm appearing in opposition to the bill. I ask our auditor to read the bill for me and tell me what it meant to the local school district. Now, this is an auditor who does some school districts, but by and large works in the private sector. And he suggests that CPA firms are not currently set up to do performance audits. As broad as this suggests, that performance audits ordinarily would be focused on certain practices within the school district, and that they would be very expensive. I'm not going to read you the entire statement here. He used the Portland example of a performance audit that suggested that they ought to close some schools, when in fact then the district looked into it and the community got involved, they can't close those schools for a variety of reasons. And the concept of the performance audit, I think it cost the Portland district $350,000 or so, and there probably were some good things out of it. But the issue of making all districts do it on this cycle, in our view, would be expensive and would not get the return that the proponents are after.
Okay, fine. I'll interrupt you, Ozzy, and welcome Representative Edwards. We've just had a couple of opening comments from the two gentlemen. I'm sure you understand their interests, but tell us what we should know about it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Randall Edwards, a representative from House District 15, representing portions of Southeast Portland. Staff is handing out some information that I'd like to go through with you, but Senate Bill 635, and again, I didn't hear the previous testimony, I believe is a small but significant bill to help school districts run more efficiently and provide some additional accountability. The bill would require that school districts conduct a performance audit at least once every 5 years. Currently, school districts are not required to do this type of auditing. Districts are required to conduct, as this current statute describes, annual audits of the books and accounts of the district. These financial audits, in other words, generally ensure that the financial information that they're providing is in compliance with accounting standards, is accurate, and meets internal controls to ensure safeguards over its finances. I have handed you a document that is published, which government organizations follow by the General Accounting Office here, and you can see on page, well, I apologize, it's been cut off, but the page that describes financial auditing, you can see from that exactly what it is that when one conducts a financial audit, what you will find. Going on, what this bill again addresses is the idea that school districts should conduct performance audits, which are a very common tool both in the private and the public sector. As defined by the, again, general accounting standards I handed to you, I wanted to read, a performance audit is, quote, an objective and systematic examination of evidence for the purpose of providing an independent assessment of the performance of a government organization, program, activity, or function in order to provide information to improve public accountability and facilitate decision-making by parties with responsibility to oversee or initiate corrective action. Now, that's sort of bureaucratese, but in essence what it does is it provides an overview of either a specific, of an entire function of the government. It could be, in this case, an entire school district. It could go all the way down to a program or a function that it provides. It also goes to describe what are some of the benefits of conducting a performance audit. As is described in the handout, it says whether the entity is, it looks at determining whether the entity is acquiring, protecting, and using its resources, such as personnel, property, and space, economically and efficiently. Two, the causes of inefficiencies or uneconomical practices, and three, whether the entity has complied with laws and regulations on matters of economy and efficiencies. Further, to the extent to which the desired results or benefits established by the legislature or other authorizing bodies are being achieved, two, the effectiveness of organizations, programs, activities, or functions, and three, whether the entity has complied with significant laws and regulations applicable to the program. And the reason why I brought this to you in part was I think we all know there's been a lot of publicity about how well school districts are doing financially. And from my personal experience working with the Portland Public Schools, I think that school district has been audited like none other in the state of Oregon and in the history of Oregon, perhaps of any government entity. Last fall, KPMG, Pete Morwick did an extensive performance audit on Portland Public Schools. I didn't want to copy this and hand this entire thing out to you, but what this has been providing for the school district is a roadmap. It gave them approximately of 140 findings over 230 recommendations on improving their activities. Does that mean they're doing things poorly? No. What it's suggesting, and what I've talked to folks in the school administration and others, that what this is doing is providing them a tool by which to better manage school districts. Some of the areas that they suggested change for Portland Public Schools is in their strategic planning, board leadership and direction, communication, administrative and management structure, the facility utilization, how they manage their bonds, information technology, the list goes on. And I'm not suggesting that this bill would force all school districts to go through this type of analysis. And quite frankly, this is an expensive analysis. I heard the tail end of this bill could be expensive. But what I do suggest is by putting this in statute, what we are asking districts to do is to begin to examine themselves by looking through an outside audit, performance audit, of how they're functioning. I think this is a tool, again, as I described, not to find problems and suggest that these are the school district is not doing a good job. I think what this is a useful management tool, again, that has been utilized by both the private and public sector. Given the amount of public money that we do spend on running schools, I think this could become a very common part of school services, the delivery of improving school delivery of services. The mandate, I'm sure, is a rub for some in this building or in some in this room. However, I think this bill is written to give districts the flexibility to conduct these where they need to. I'm not, again, suggesting that they have an entire district go through every aspect of its being, but what I'm suggesting is that the legislature has an interest in making sure that, again, either certain parts of their district or whatever the local board wants to conduct through a performance audit would have that flexibility to do so. And I think in closing, Mr. Chair, this is a good bill to improve accountability. We're asking a lot of our students, our children, our teachers. I think this is a small step in, again, giving all of us some comfort and the school board some comfort in that they are managing their districts as best they are. I believe they're doing a very good job. I just believe that this is another tool for them to use, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Questions?
Yes.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Representative Edwards.
Yes, Senator.
I have several questions. How does this proposal relate to the quality education model?
Mr. Chair, that's a very good question. There was no discussion, and as a member of the Oregon Quality Model, the group that looked at that, of performance auditing. I would suggest that this actually would fit nicely into the notion of looking at how schools are delivering services,
mm-hmm.
And therefore isn't, I don't think, conflicts with any of the recommendations that we came out with.
Okay. And then two more questions, if I may.
Certainly.
Representative, is there currently no policy that directs school districts to perform an audit on any kind of schedule?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordon, if I understand your question, the statutes are silent about performance auditing, and if you look at the bill, it distinguishes inserting into current statute financial audits so we know what we're talking about.
Right.
New language suggests that they also, in addition, conduct every 5 years a mm-hmm. performance audit of some type. And I, again, believe the bill provides enough flexibility so we're not necessarily asking for this, although I think a local board could decide that mm-hmm. this is the appropriate way to go.
How did you arrive at 5 years versus 3 years or
some other number? And then also, how many, do you know how many of the current school districts conduct audits of the type that you are defining here?
To that latter point, Mr. Chair, I don't know how many performance audits outside of this one from Portland Public Schools have been conducted. The one in every 5 years was something I discussed with some financial folks about what is reasonable. Some organizations do it annually in the private sector. It seemed like a reasonable starting point, one in five. Am I wedded to that? No, but I just thought at some point you need to at least say, in a reasonable amount of time, 5 years seem reasonable to have these conducted periodically around the state.
Okay,
members, we are supposed to be out of this room now. Some of us have 3 o'clock. I don't want to take a motion. We still have this bill in our possession, and we can bring it back up if necessary.
Commission vote 751.
Pardon?
I want commission vote 751, please.
Okay. Let's see. First, I want to close the public hearing and work session on.
We go from, by the way, that the other committee just agreed today, so we haven't agreed.
Okay, but a lot of us have 3 o'clock.
We ought to.
Revenue.
I know.
Is there a chance I could just make a comment?
Sure.
On the performance audit concept, I really, you hear me saying this over and over at times, but in a sense, we go in cycles sometimes, and we devastate good programs, and Ozzie well remembers, because Ozzie and I both weren't very much involved in it years ago, the Bureau of Educational Research at the University of Oregon. Well, it was not specifically a performance audit. A district did contract with the university to come in and do different kinds of surveys. Sometimes it was on a school building project, but other times they're coming looking at the board working relationships, all sorts of concepts. And those things were available, and districts would contract with the university to provide that kind of service. Well, that's all gone by the wayside at the university now. My concern is not with the performance audit, because I think the idea is good. I think it needs some real development on how to go about it. And the financing of it—it's an expensive project to throw on districts right at the moment. And I think it's something that ought to be kept alive, and districts ought to be thinking about along the line and encouraged. But I'm just hesitant to kind of move that direction at this point. I'd almost love to see us go back to the bureau kind of thing, Ozzie, where that sort of thing was available for school districts to utilize. But I just make that.
Thank you, Senator. I am going to close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 63. Five, any other business come?
Yes.
Senator Courtney wishes to be recorded as voting yes on Senate Bill 751. Is there an objection? So ordered.
Yeah, I just have one item for the good of the order, and I'm just expressing a concern here. It goes back to Senate Bill 960. As the bill was being described or characterized by staff, and I guess this can be considered instructive and constructive for all of us. The bill was described as, quote, this is the bill that makes a lawsuit go away. And I have a problem with that characterization of the bill before us. For the reasons that I stated about appearances and the appearance of impropriety, et cetera. So I hope my comments will be taken for what they are. It's just a constructive and instructive criticism for all of us. And I'm not just pointing a finger here.
Certainly.
Okay.
So noted. Thank you. Any other business coming before the committee? Seeing none, hearing none, we are adjourned.